versus Michael Bynum. Sometimes it gets a little stuck. It should be lever. It's on the right side.
Or is it? I just need it down 2 inches or so.
Is it that? I think it's the one on the right hand side. That it, you sort of have to lift it up.
Do you have to?
You kind of. Sometimes it's sticky in that chair which I frequently sit in.
My finger touching.
Just please wait a minute. We need to. We need to get Judge Sykes a little more comfortable here.
I'm telling you, it's this lever.
I thought that's what I was pulling, but it wouldn't go.
Sometimes.
Oh,
try. Thank you.
Oh, she does it all.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I understand my daughter has the same problem.
Bounce. Yeah. Chair's too big. All right, excuse us. You may now proceed, Mr. Niehaus.
Thank you. May it please the court, my name is Jim Niehaus. I represent the distributors. My client is a small wholesale book distributor that unfortunately got caught in a fierce battle between Triumph Books and Michael Bynum. In deciding this appeal, I ask that you look at the evidence.
Mr. Niehaus, could you answer just a technical question? Is this money, this $34,622, now in the court registry, or has it been paid over to anybody?
It has not been paid over to anybody.
Is it paid into the court, or is it just out there?
It's out there.
Okay. And can you tell me when the court did this rather unusual move of converting this into an independent proceeding, or whatever it is we should say the court did? Did anybody say anything about jurisdiction, or is there a complaint, or is there any document?
No, it was he did it in the oral hearing after we filed our objections to the magistrate's report. The district judge held a hearing. It was September 9th, I believe, right around there, about a year ago. At the beginning of the hearing, he said, I want this the appellees to go out and file the regular filing fee when this is over with. And then at the very end of the hearing, he said that I'm converting this to a regular civil case. And that was at the very end of the hearing. At that time, it seemed strange to me. And frankly, it wasn't until I started thinking about it a little bit that, wait a second, that raises a subject matter jurisdiction issue. We only have $34,000 in controversy here. He's converted it to a regular civil proceeding. There's no longer the issue of ancillary jurisdiction.
Why do you think we should see this after he converts it as a $34,000 case, not $133,000? I mean, the judgment, whoever it may have been against, and I realize that's another issue you want to talk about, was for the larger amount, obviously exceeding $75,000, and under the St. Paul test, probably enough for the jurisdictional amount. Why do we shrink it down to 34 later?
Because at the time he converted it, and even well before that time, but at the time he converted it, the only issue was the $34,000. That was the only amount of controversy.
This is such a messy record, I have to say. How do we know that for sure, given everything? And then there's a second question, which is, isn't it kind of hyper-technical at this point to say that jurisdiction evaporates because the judge perhaps erroneously thinks that somebody's got to pay in a new filing fee?
No, I don't think that it's merely the judge saying, I want to collect a higher filing fee because there's been so much activity on this case. There are actually several reasons why there's no subject matter jurisdiction here. First, under the Yang decision out of this court, which followed the Peacock decision out of the Supreme Court, what this court...
We try to do that.
What's that?
I said we try to do that when the Supreme Court has
the
relevant decision.
This court said in a garnishment action, there's ancillary jurisdiction unless there are other issues injected into it that makes it essentially a separate proceeding. And that happened in this case long before the district judge said, I'm going to convert this to a regular civil proceeding. That happened actually in front of the magistrate when the issue about who the judgment was against and who the money was owed to.
Well, you see, that's what distinguishes this from the ordinary garnishment case. The ordinary garnishment case has a judgment creditor who's trying to collect from the judgment debtor, and then maybe the judgment debtor has a bank or something or an employer or some other source of money, so you go after that other source of money. Here, the question is, who's the judgment debtor, right?
That is one of the questions, yes. And if you look at the judgment that was issued by the Northern District of Illinois, it's pretty clear. It's Michael Bynum individually and DBA Epic Sports.
Well, that's the problem. That's why it's not clear, because it says Michael Bynum DBA Epic Sports, and you don't know what the court was doing.
Except the law is you ignore the DBA, and I cited a case in the brief that says a DBA is surplusage.
Surely federal law is going to govern the scope of a federal judgment.
Well,
I mean, couldn't you go back and see who was served, for example, in the Illinois case? I don't know how far one can dig into the record and still be within bounds.
Well, I would suggest the easy way to resolve that issue is to look at Triumph's conduct after they learned that the distributors owed money to Texas Football. What Triumph did, it did three things. In the Northern District of Illinois, it first moved to amend the judgment to add Texas Football as a defendant in that case, so the judgment would clearly apply against Texas Football. When that motion was not granted, they then separately filed a new lawsuit in the Northern District of Illinois against Texas Football, seeking a judgment against Texas Football, which Triumph obtained. So clearly, those two acts indicate Triumph's belief that it needed to clarify or it needed to obtain a judgment against Texas Football to properly collect on it. Now, the other thing they did, which is the problem, is Triumph then, at the same time it was telling the Northern District of Illinois, we need to amend this judgment or we need a new judgment against Texas Football, they were telling the Northern District of Indiana, oh, we have a judgment against Texas Football because it's DBA Epic Sports. And those names are similar, so therefore we have a judgment, and the money owed to this Delaware corporation is subject to our judgment. So they took inconsistent positions in the Northern District of Indiana and Northern District of Illinois.
And the record is perfectly clear that this company, Texas Football / Epic Sports, is in fact a Delaware corporation, a separate entity?
We submitted a... It was submitted before I got involved in the case, but there was introduced in the court below, in the record below, a copy of the certificate from the Delaware Secretary of State saying Texas Football / Epic Sports Corp. is a corporation in Delaware.
Okay.
And I would ask that in deciding this appeal, you look at the evidence, because the only evidence here are the affidavits of Michael Raymond, the interrogatory answers that Michael Raymond gave. Triumph did not introduce evidence to controvert that testimony from Michael Raymond.
You know, there's some overtone in this case that the district court, I'm not sure if I would specify the magistrate judge or the district court judge, thinks that your clients were not cooperating, I'll put it that way, with the court proceeding, that somehow they were guilty of some sort of misconduct by continuing to pay these bills after they'd been told that the garnishment proceeding was underway.
Right. I recognize that tone, and I don't think it's appropriate. My client did something that I, as a lawyer, encouraged them not to do, which is they represented themselves in this matter. They got this garnishment. They weren't really sure what to do. They sent a letter to the district court. The district court said, you know, we can't provide you legal advice, get a lawyer. They didn't. My client doesn't like to spend money on legal fees, especially in a dispute that they're not involved with.
Well, the way garnishment law typically operates, though, once you're on notice of a garnishment action as a garnishment defendant, the risk of making a mistake in payment to the judgment debtor is on you.
That's correct. But they were their interrogatory answers were very clear. They didn't owe any money to the judgment debtor, Michael Bynum.
It just gets back to the legal issue that's present.
Yeah, it gets back to the legal issue. And they tried to be very careful in their interrogatory answers, at least as I read them, where they were saying, we don't owe any money to Michael Bynum individually. We owe it to this corporation that is represented by Michael Bynum. You know, you guys figure it out. They got an order saying, don't pay any money. Then they got another order saying that that order is stayed. Then they get a letter from the lawyer representing Bynum who says, the order has been stayed. Don't pay any money into court.
And that's where we stand even today?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. The money has not been paid into court pursuant to that order. We did file a motion for stay pending appeal, but pursuant to that, to the original garnishment order, no money's been paid into court in that regard.
Okay.
So, thank you very much.
Thank you very much. We will take this case under advisement.